Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to The Love Code. This is a show that really was created out of my intention to have a vehicle that allows us to stay inspired, uplifted, transformed, to access the healing power that we have within us, to know that the more we stay connected to our soul, the more we can live a life filled with joy, happiness, gratitude, peace, and all of the qualities and experiences that we really desire when we are connected to our true spiritual self. So thanks for joining me today, and I always like to welcome people who are listening for the very first time. If you'd like to continue to listen to The Love Code or the other show that I do on Progressive Radio Network every Thursday at 4 p.m. called What Women Want, that show. That show is more about health, how to optimize our health, how to expand our health, and to be able to be educated so we can make informed decisions. So if you'd like to get both of my shows, all you need to do is either go to my website, which is drcherylselman.com, or like me on my Facebook page, What Women Must Know. Women Must Know, because I post there, and I also send all the archive shows out every week. So either way, you'll be sure to get both of these really enlightening programs, and I hope you will be joining me and coming back every week and listening. Lots of great information. You know, I just love doing both of these programs because I receive so much value. It's a wonderful way for me to stay on the leading edge and have amazing one-on-one conversations with very special people. So that you will take full advantage and allow yourself to just keep expanding with knowledge, with truthful information, with inspiration. And today is another one of those inspiring shows because we're going to be talking about a topic that I'm and to be honest, which is why I invited my guest Summer to Yin Yoga, the healing. A little bit about Josh. Josh is a yin yoga teacher, a licensed acupuncturist for the past 15 years. 20 years. He leads workshops, trainings, and retreats in the United States and Europe, and he offers a unique perspective to the practice and education of yin yoga. He founded the Summers School of Yin Yoga, which offers 200-hour and 300-hour certifications in yin yoga teacher. Book is called Sport of Mindfulness Training in Sport, and in partnership with Yoga Journal, he produced an online course called Yin Yoga 101, The Benefits of Slowing Down, which is a six-week course that is an in-depth exploration of the theory and practice of yin yoga, delving into the physical, energetic, and meditative aspects of yin yoga. So quite an accomplished an author, and it's my great pleasure to welcome Josh Summers to the show. Hello, Josh.
Hi, Cheryl. Thanks for having me.
You're so welcome, and so accomplished. You've really achieved so much as an author and creating these courses and traveling around the world. So it's wonderful that you have really taken your mission and expanded it worldwide.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor to be able to share the practice.
Yeah, I know. It's wonderful to be doing your Dharma, right? To really be on purpose. And that's how I want to start our conversation today. I'm always curious as to how people got to where they are in their lives.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's one that I often ask guests myself. If looking back over the last 30-plus years, I would say the main driver and how, in terms of what got me to where I am, is probably a common experience that many people have, which is just the experience of pain in life or suffering, and how does one reconcile oneself to that experience, whether it's physical or psychological or spiritual, and I was definitely suffering a lot when I was younger. Had a lot of kind of wounds from growing up that kind of landed me in a kind of depression in my early 20s while I was in college. And I just began looking for ways to make sense of it, found yoga, got into meditation, and really was through pursuing those that I did feel that so much benefit to my whole being came forward, and it became something that I just wanted to share with others.
So have you been doing your practices since that time and studying yoga since that time?
Yeah, I would say I really credit my introduction to spirituality to a teacher I had in high school who was a music teacher. And in addition to just teaching music, he really sort of taught the music as a spiritual experience or a spiritual practice, and was getting us to do guided meditations, guided visualizations to help with our performance. And that kind of opened the door to me. And then later on, I came to yoga to sort of explore that process or that practice on a deeper level. So it has been something I've been engaged with for majority of my adult life, I'd say.
So, Josh, I always like to ask my guests the journey that they went through in their life that got them on their path, that led them to the work they're doing. So that's what I'd like to ask you. What was it that guided you? What were the experiences you had in your life that led you to doing this work that you're very dedicated to? And, how'd you get here?
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Selman. In terms of what got me going, I always think of a phrase that the American spiritual philosopher Ken Wilber uses sometimes. He says, if you're truly, truly fortunate in life, you'll experience a suffering so great that you will look comprehensively for the end of suffering. And for myself, that was definitely a big piece of what I'd say propelled me onto a quote-unquote spiritual path. Was just early in my life, my late teens, early 20s, I found myself kind of plunged into a bit of an existential depression and didn't really have a strong sense of what life was about, what I wanted to do with myself. And yoga and meditation kind of presented themselves as a part of a path that could lead to deeper insights into the nature of the meaning of life, and also how to kind of overcome that primary experience of suffering that I was wrestling with at the time.
So that was your pathway to moving out of the depression and the difficulties in your early life, university, early 20s. Right. So
exactly.
Did you go, just like, have you been involved with yoga ever since as a path, as a profession?
Yeah, I would say my professional career kind of took a bit of a meandering start in that coming out of university, finishing my undergraduate degree, I had no strong inclination of where I wanted to go, which was actually part of the existential issues that I was struggling with. I didn't know what the hell to do with myself. I knew I didn't want to be a banker, I didn't want to be a doctor, and I didn't want to be a lawyer, and I didn't want to teach. And those are the four big things that seem to be available to someone with a bachelor's degree. So I was into yoga at the time, and I went to Asia for a while, ended up teaching English as a second language in Taiwan and India for a bit, and just over the years kind of sort of stepped or creeped more deeply into the practice. And then at some point, the idea of becoming a licensed acupuncturist presented itself. That seemed like a good fit in terms of what my natural interests were, but also seemed to be a way to kind of have a professional form of right livelihood that would be in alignment with kind of the values I had from meditation and yoga. So, yeah, to answer your question, I've been that sort of was something that started in my early 20s and has sort of been maturing as a companion in my life ever since.
Well, how blessed were you to find acupuncture, which I just think is such a, not only a powerful healing modality, but it's a path that has so much wisdom in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel pretty fortunate.
Yeah, you found your path. It found you, you know,
right, exactly.
As tends to happen, you know. So, yin yoga is something that is really new to me. I've been obviously aware of yoga for a really, really long time. There was a point in my life where I was teaching yoga. I've been in India, so I learned a little in India. But I have never really heard of yin yoga. And when I came across it recently somewhere, I'm not even sure how I found it, but what sparked my interest was a comment that yin yoga is working with the fascia. And that really fascinates me because I've had several guests on my show. We've talked about fascia. We've talked about the importance of fascia, which we'll get into again. And when I saw that yin yoga is a yoga practice that helps with fascia, which obviously not only helps with just healing and healing on all levels, but also rejuvenation, understanding the importance of ways to enhance the functioning and repair and health of the fascia, it just really caught my attention. So why don't we just dive in, Josh, and let's talk about, first of all, yin yoga. What is yin yoga? And we'll go from there.
Sure. So yin yoga, kind of the way I try to set it up is that, and this is something that we talk about in the yin yoga community, is you hear this phrase that yin yoga is the other half of practice. And that would apply to physical yoga practices. So yoga, as you may know, is a broad topic to refer to a whole host of disciplines that are meant to unite the practitioner to a higher reality, to a higher truth, to a deeper connection with reality or the world. And physical hatha yoga practice are postures, the postures that we normally associate with yoga practice. That's just one slice of the yoga tradition. There's karma yoga practice paths of, that would be the path of skillful action in the world, or there's devotional paths, there's knowledge paths through study. And so postural yoga is just one form of and one manifestation of the yoga tree. And within that, I would say yin yoga is a complementary balancing practice to other forms of physical yoga practices that are more dynamic and muscularly engaging. So it's not a standalone practice. Yin yoga wouldn't be something that you would do exclusively as your sole physical form of exercise. But because of the way, as you hinted at, because of the way yin yoga addresses the fascia of the body, yin yoga has a very vital role in sort of a holistic strategy for overall health. So to actually get into what the way someone would practice it is that the general features of the practice are that most of the poses are held passively, meaning the muscles are relaxed, and those postures are held passively while someone's sitting on the floor in one of the poses, and with the muscles relaxed, they more or less stay relatively still for maybe 3 to 4 to 5 or 6 minutes in the pose to let the tissues, like you're mentioning, the fascia, let the fascia soak in the gentle forces of the posture. And as we'll get into, I'm sure, that recipe of being in a pose for several minutes with the muscles relaxed brings about some really good positive physiological benefits, energetic benefits, meditative benefits for the practitioner.
So can we just go back a little bit to the practices found in that in the Ayurvedic tradition or the Indian tradition where yoga came from? So yoga was one part of a much more comprehensive, not just philosophy, but a system that, because you had mentioned in describing it, to yoga is really designed to the practice, the system is designed to open us up to the greater potential, the spiritual potential that we are, to become more aware, more connected, opening up our higher centers so we have more access to intuition and sense of oneness and connection. So the system was created. And can you explain more of that whole system, Josh? So we really can put the practice of yoga in a context of the greater purpose.
Yeah, I mean, I should stay here. I am not a scholar of Indian philosophy. I'm an enthusiastic consumer of it, and I try to keep up on it. But I would say, you know, I have not gotten my PhD in Sanskrit or the history of yoga philosophy. So what I'll be saying are sort of just general observations I've made, and that is that yoga is a broad term. It usually is translated something as to yoke. So the literal translation would be that yoga is a yoking of the individual to something greater. And that sometimes takes on a theistic tone, that you're yoking yourself to God. Sometimes it's a more secular or non-theistic tone, that you're yoking yourself to reality or to a dimension of peace that's independent of changing circumstances. But I think in the modern context, people are somewhat flexible in terms of how they interpret and shape their sense of what they're trying to yoke themselves to. So I'm not here to tell you what the definitive yoga thing is. I think there are many traditions in the yoga path, and some of them are more contemplative, more meditative. Some of them are more in the world, action oriented. And I was just mentioning that because most people, when they think of the word yoga, they think of a physical pose, like a stretch or something, like putting your foot behind your head or something. And really, that's just a thin slice of the broader yoga tree. So in that regard, I do think that yin yoga or any form of physical yoga, it can be a doorway or a path into that experience of yoking oneself to a higher aspect of reality, or a deeper aspect of reality, or a more rugged truth about the way things are, if you will.
So that's great, because I think it really is important to understand that these practices are not just to give us more strength or flexibility. They actually come from that tradition that is allowing us to condition the body and to balance the body and to calm the body so we can have a calmer mind, which is why yoga and meditation go so well together. And then, you know, we can bring in how to eat and rejuvenation practices that have come out of that Ayurvedic tradition. But yoga is a way to understand and bring balance and harmony and health to the body. And most of us, I speak for myself, you know, we've always thought of yoga as hatha yoga, and you have these postures, and some of them are difficult for people to do for various reasons. And one of the yoga studios that I go to, they're really big into power yoga, which is just like too intense for me. And I'm into more of the restorative yoga now, and including it into other forms of exercise that I do. But let's talk a bit about the distinction between restorative yoga, which many people may know, which is the kind of really calming, relaxing form of yoga, and yin yoga.
Yeah, no, it's a good distinction to make, and I want to be careful here too. I'm a little bit cautious. I've been watching too many political hearings. I want to be cautious about how I say things. I have not trained in restorative yoga. I've practiced. I've gone to classes in the past, and I was familiar with a version of restorative yoga that's found in Iyengar yoga, which is another popularized form of yoga. But in general, I'd say the broad distinction between restorative yoga and yin yoga is that of one of intention. And in restorative yoga, the intention is primarily to support the body through the use of props. So someone would come into a posture, but they would use a variety of props so that their body could be held in an opening that was very gentle and that wasn't producing any strong sensation or strong experience of stretch or stress on the tissue in the body. And that very passive, gentle opening supported by props allows the person's nervous system to really profoundly calm down. The breath cycle can calm, quiet down, and that can be very, very healing on an energetic / nervous system level. The difference with yin yoga is that, and yin will, on the surface might look very similar to restorative in that the person's on the floor, they might be using props, they might not be using props, they're slow, they're not moving very much in a pose. But the main difference is one of intention there, where in yin yoga, the intention is to actually gently and appropriately stress certain areas of the body to produce a kind of dull, achy pressure in the area that indicates that the tissue is being loaded with a mechanical stress that will physiologically activate a healing and repair response in the tissue. So they are similar, and there's definitely kind of a hybridization out there where people are kind of overlapping or using both modalities in their classes. But from a purist perspective, yin yoga will be seeking out to gently stress the tissue, whereas restorative yoga would have an absence of that kind of stress.
Okay, great. That's a good explanation. And it leads me to ask you, where did yin yoga come from? What's the origin of it?
And that's a good question, too. And it really actually depends, I think, who you ask. Because I can tell you where I learned the practice. There's a gentleman named Paul Greeley who had been teaching something called yin yoga that I encountered 20-plus years ago. And the way he put it, he said, if you look back through the yoga tradition, you will see elements of what we are calling yin yoga really sort of sprinkled throughout the yoga tradition, in that there's instructions in certain texts where people are encouraged to stay in poses for several minutes to prepare their body to sit more comfortably in meditation. And so the style of yin is really, I would say, more of a revived emphasis around being passive and staying for longer periods of time in a pose to prepare one for meditation, prepare one for seated meditation. But it's not necessarily a new practice. It's sort of old wine in a new bottle, if you will. So the practice itself has been around for a while. It just kind of got rebranded in the last 20, 30 years with the term yin to distinguish it from more active, dynamic forms of yoga, which would include power yoga, vinyasa, Iyengar yoga, and that sort of thing.
Oh, great. Well, that's really helpful, because I haven't heard the term yin yoga really before. So just recently has it entered into my sphere, and which made me really curious, which is why we're having this conversation. So can we talk about fascia? Can we talk about the role of fascia in health, in healing, in rejuvenation, because it really is a fascinating topic for me?
Yeah, no, it is. And it's fascia, I guess to start out with, I'd say fascia, I borrow a phrase or two from a guy in Pittsburgh named David Lasondak, who has written recently a book called Fascia, What It Is and Why It Matters. And so listeners might appreciate checking out his book if they're interested to know more about fascia and its effects on our health or role it plays in our health. But the phrase that I think gives a good sense of what the fascia is that it could be thought of as the body's soft skeleton. So it is a three-dimensional fibrous tissue that literally wraps and holds together everything within the body. So every cell, every organ, everything is linked and held together by this three-dimensional fabric. And in that linking, in that connection of holding everything together, it is also, in a sense, the body's intranet. So it's a network of communication And it's a way through which the body stays in contact with itself internally. So it's a hot topic. As you probably know, there's yearly conferences, international conferences now, where researchers are coming together to discuss the latest findings about fascia. And many of the experts in the field say we're just in the infancy of our understanding of the mechanisms and roles that this tissue has for our health. But it certainly is promising for lots of mysterious things that have sort of buggered the understanding of Western mind so far in terms of how things are working or how things are connecting. We're starting to see what impact the fascia has on our health. So in saying that, I also want to say that yin yoga, while it definitely has an impact on the fascia, yin yoga is not the only yoga that would impact the fascia. Literally any practice that you do that involves moving your body will influence the fascia. The question is, how do the various practices or physical modalities work differently on the fascia? And that's where some of the research coming out of the fascial world suggests that these gentle, long, passive stretches, similar to what we do in yin yoga, can be very beneficial for really in some ways reducing inflammation in the fascia and reducing contracture or the shrinking of the fascia due to immobilization or stress.
Yeah, you know, the fascia is a hot topic, and it's like the fiber optic cable system of our body, because, well, you know, when I started learning about fascia, it's like speed of light. It's communicating to the brain and back, all the parts of the body, getting this information, electrical information, which is pretty amazing when I learned about it.
Right, you know, and just a couple of simple facts. Some of the fascial researchers will go so far as to say the fascia is the richest sensory organ of the body, in that there's more sensory nerve endings in the fascia than there are in the eye. So your brain is very, very interested in the fascia, and through the sensory input that it gets in the fascia, your sense of self is given shape. It gives you a sense of how and where your body is, and it gives you a sense of the internal environment through the fascial sensory nerve endings. So how you are, where you are, that's all mediated vis-a-vis the fascia.
And the other thing that really interested me was what happens when we damage the fascia. So when we cut into the body in any way, so you have any type of surgeries, you know, it could be some sort of really severe injury where, you know, you are severing, you know, the fascia. Any kind of surgery, anything can lead to a problem with the fascia. And because the fascia is in communication with all these systems of the body, if you damage the fascia, and the way it was described is like when you never look at a piece of raw meat or chicken, there's like a thin layer over the breast or the thigh. That's the fascia. That's how we can recognize the fascia, which is wet, slippery, right? And if you cut into the skin and damage the fascia, it can actually it damages the fascia in such a way that it loses that slippery moisture quality, and it becomes dry, hardened, and adheres. So you can have adhesions to various organs, which then can start impairing the function of organs.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so when there is trauma of any sort, whether it's surgery or just an injury in sport or something, there's a classification of cells within the fascia that kind of zoom in as emergency medical technicians to repair the fascia. And they come in and they lay down collagen, which is one of the primary fibers of the collagen. Fibers of the fascia. They don't lay down a lot of collagen in all sorts of different directions. And as you're describing, that creates kind of the scar or the adhesion that heals things up. But that tissue, when it's adhered, it becomes very dry, and it can make it more difficult for that fabric to be a good force, a transmitter of forces, so the body may get pain, it may not have good movement anymore in the area, and as it becomes drier, it becomes more difficult for nutrients from the vascular system to get to the cells that it needs to nourish because of the dryness within the fascia. The moisture and hydration of the fascia allows for basically nutrients to diffuse out of capillary beds to cells and for waste products from cellular metabolism to be excreted. And that's why it's so important that the fascia on one level stays hydrated.
Right.
So to maybe tie it into yin yoga, I would add that when there is kind of a chronic dryness or thickening of the fascia or increased adhesions in the fascia, the question is how do you help return the fascia to a healthy state? How do you help it regain its functionality? And that's where certain forms of stress are required. If you don't stress it, it will sort of remain dry and stiff. But if you go in with a sort of a thumb from a massage therapist or a body worker, or if you get on a massage ball and work out that thickening and sort of adhesion of the fascia, and you can do that also with a posture, that you start to break up the cross links amongst the fibers and help restore the tissue to its normal functionality.
Which is such an important point. I just want to share that when I started learning about fascia because I work with microcurrent technology, which is restoring the electrical potential to cells, so it's helping the cells to get the energy. And one of the benefits of microcurrent is healing scars. So wherever there's a scar, you're actually are damaging the fascia, which can spread. That dryness can spread. And so when I was working, and when I do work with this microcurrent technology, it actually is realigning the collagen fibers and establishing that electrical current and communication across the fascia. So you're healing the damage and you're restoring proper function, which is so fascinating. And then the understanding that the older we get, and if you have a lot of surgeries, that's going to impact the fascia, it starts contracting. So it can contract. It can contract your body. It can contract your organs. And it leads to all the things you just mentioned, this impairment of proper nourishment throughout all the whole system of our body, which, you know, brings us back to understanding the importance of paying attention to the needs of the fascia and finding ways to help us have a healthy functioning system again so we can, you know, have this vitality circulating through our body.
Right, and that's that sense of vitality circulating through the body is what many of the ancient systems of holistic medicine refer to as kind of a prana or chi or life force that is kind of an organizational intelligence that keeps every part of our body in communication and healthy relationship to every other part. And if that circulation of energy is occluded or blocked or insufficient, then that's where patterns of disease and ill health start to manifest.
Yeah, so it's so fascinating that there's this growing awareness through yin yoga as a way to rehabilitate, in a sense, the fascia. Because fascia and rejuvenation and regeneration really go hand in hand. We cannot stay healthy and vital, especially all those baby boomers out there, not just people recovering from surgeries, but all the baby boomers going into their 60s, 70s, 80s. If you want to remain healthy, vital, full functioning of your body, you need to understand the role of the fascia.
Right. And, of course, with aging populations, there's that adage that as we age, we dry out, we become drier, and a lot of that is probably due, from my sense, from just losing a lot of mobility and not being as active, so that the tissue itself is becoming drier. But also in the dryness, as we've said, that the tissue can contract, the fascia has a contractile aspect, and so in the contraction we then become hypomobile, less mobile than we were normally, because of the holding of the tightness in the fascia. So for folks, as we age, it's really a good idea, I think, to have some sort of routine, think of it like a movement hygiene or a mobility hygiene practice, where you do something on a somewhat regular basis to prevent the contracture and to help restore the natural functioning of it.
Do you think that's why, as we age, we tend to, for some, lose height? Is it like the tightening of the fascia that's contracting us?
That's a good question. You know, I'd be definitely in speculative land in going into that, but I do think, yeah, it would make sense. Both the hydration and the contracture piece would, I think, could reduce someone's height. I know that people joke when they see me after a while. They say, "Did you get taller?" and then they say, "It must be all the yin yoga you're doing." But if you think about it, the yin yoga, by coming into a pose and being very quiet and still in it and just relaxing the muscles into the pose for several minutes, it's a bit like a form of traction that you might do in a physical therapist's office, but in gently creating traction along the spine and other joints, I think there's a way you'll be returning or maintaining one's normal range of motion.
Okay, so my next question is this form of yoga, is yin yoga available to everyone? Is there qualifications? I know it's done on the floor, so do you have to be able to get on the floor? What are the limitations of who can do yin yoga?
With few exceptions, and I would, the exceptions I would think of would be anybody that had some sort of very severe connective tissue disease, where any kind of gentle stress on the tissue could be injurious or problematic, then that would be a contraindication for the practice. But even though most of the poses are done on the floor, there's a way that a skillful teacher could figure out how to adapt the majority of the poses to the unique conditions of any individual. So if someone couldn't get on the floor, a chair or a few chairs could be used. Someone could use the wall as a prop, in addition to all the other props that we use in the yoga practice, so that the intentions of the poses and the intentions of the practice could be made accessible virtually for anybody. So I always try to say to people, and I think this is part of its popularity now, is that I think consumers might come into a yoga class and think, "Oh, I'm not going to be good at the practice, or I'm not a very good yoga practitioner because I'm so tight, or I'm stiff, I'm not flexible, or I can't touch my toes or whatever." And all of that is really downplayed in yin yoga, in the sense that we recognize that everybody's unique, everybody's body structures are unique. And as long as you are working at an appropriate range of sensation for your body, it doesn't really matter what your posture looks like. And so it takes, I would say that the yin yoga practice takes the performative achieving dimension of the kind of the egoic struggle in the practice, and it kind of puts that aside and says, "Okay, look, here's the basic intention. You want to come into a pose where you're going to feel a mild sensation in this particular area. How do we go about doing that? How do we assist that? And then just let gravity and time in the pose just gently work into the fascia so that the benefits start to accrue."
Right. Yeah, that's great.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
I think if you look at a lot of the other styles, like they have this kind of performative dimension where you might be balancing on one leg and holding your other foot way up high or standing on your hands. And those things, I think, to many are kind of a bit intimidating. But in yin, there's no prescribed range of motion that you have to get to. There's no perfect idealized manifestation of the pose. We really speak about understanding what the intentions of the pose are in terms of where you're trying to feel a sensation. And if you are practicing that way, you don't have to be looking like you're ready to be on the cover of Yoga Journal. You can be in any range of motion and appropriately stressing the tissue to receive the fascial benefits of it.
Right. Yeah, because that makes sense. I mean, you're there. I would imagine when you're doing it is you're focused within to work on those areas that you're with the fascia, areas that are tight. It's not a correct form as such as it is in other forms of yoga, which, you know, whether you're competitive with yourself or with others, it definitely shows up in a class, right?
Right?
So, well, it's more therapeutic, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think the it shares those similar intentions to other practices, if you want to talk about therapy and therapeutic effects. But one of the things that is sort of an element of that's emphasized as an element in the yin practice is but it's not exclusive to yin yoga. This is where it can get a little confusing. One of the things that we try to emphasize in the yin yoga practice is that each person's bodies truly are unique, and one of the levels that they're very unique on is the level of the skeleton. And this is something that a pioneer, Paul Greely, has really emphasized for decades now in his teaching, talking about how because bones are different, like your femurs are different from my femurs, my hips are different from your hips in terms of shape, orientation, length, twist, and amount of curvature, and all of that, because there are these very fundamental skeletal differences, the way a person or a student would align themselves in a pose must also be unique to their body. There cannot be a universal alignment of one size fits all where everybody will align themselves in the pose the same way. That model of trying to align the body does not acknowledge and include the very real truth of skeletal variation. Once you understand that everybody's bones are different, then the teacher needs to lead a class in a functional alignment perspective, which would be, as I was trying to say earlier, lined around what is the intention of the pose, and then how does the individual align their body to meet the intentions of the pose in a way that's unique to them, and it will look unique to them. It won't look the same for everybody in the room because of the bone variation piece. So that's something that is a big part of practicing yin yoga, but it's not unique to yin yoga. It's really unique to, it would be appropriate for any style of exercise that involved a body,
mm-hmm.
if you know what I mean.
Right. So we've talked about the yin yoga's focus on fascia, on helping to restore healthy fascia and to focus within. And maybe we can just talk a little bit about that aspect of focusing within. You know, there's so much interesting research going on about the importance of calming the nervous system and how the excited and excitable nervous system, when we're under stress, and our culture is very much a culture of stress, is affecting our ability to heal, to repair. It, stress in itself and an excited nervous system really shuts down the cell's ability to heal and repair. So it's in protective mode, creating all these stress hormones that we're never supposed to be on 24/7. So I would imagine that's another facet of something like yin yoga, which is very inward focused. Do you have some thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think what you're getting at is the inwardly meditative dimension of the practice, and that's something that I would say is on hand whether or not someone explicitly goes into the practice with that intention, meaning you could go into the practice saying, I want to meditate in my practice while I'm doing these poses. I want to have a cultivation of mindfulness and presence to what's going on, and focus on my breath, for example. Or someone could just go and say, I just want to work on the fascia and release stress in my tissue, unwind the tension in the fascia. And if they were to do that, I would say they probably were going to be very much in the same camp as the person that went in with the intention to meditate, just because the form of the practice is so simple. You're coming into a pose, you're staying still for several minutes, upwards around 4 to 5 minutes, and just by doing that, your attention tends to be internalized more. Right. Now, that can be cued as part of the practice, meaning a teacher or the facilitator of the class can guide you to focus more on the internalization of the sensations, breath awareness, patterns of mood and emotion and thoughts that come up. You can be kind of guided into that. But my guess is that if someone were just to do the practice on their own, they would be in that territory anyway, just because of the simplicity of the practice. You're just in a pose for 5 minutes with yourself. And that's basically what meditation is. You're just sitting with yourself and getting to see what it's like to be you. And I do think that there's something about the practice, and I can't fully get into, I'm not sure what the exact mechanism is. You might have some more insights on it than I do, but I know experientially it definitely down-regulates the sympathetic nervous system, that fight-and-flight response, and seems to tone up the parasympathetic rest-and-restore part of the nervous system.
Yeah, just calming down and just paying attention, which is where the mindfulness part comes in, because you're then just bringing your attention inward rather than your thoughts running around. You're noticing. You're putting your attention in specific areas, which will definitely calm the system down.
Well, I would say, you know, one of the things that the reason why I was sort of saying that that would happen, whether it was explicitly mentioned or not, is that when you come into a yin yoga practice or a yin yoga pose, you are inviting sensations that are just above a kind of a neutral level of sensation. So you're inviting sensations that are non-neutral. You'll feel somewhere on a sensation scale of 2 to 4 out of 10, so mild, moderate, slight achiness to the area or tension. Those are the sensations you're encouraging, and they're not insignificant. So because of that, I sort of have a sense that it's the sensations that are in the pose that draw your attention to them. They literally clamor for your attention. And because the sensations of the pose are clamoring for your attention, it makes it more difficult to really get lost in flights of thought about the future or past. You're kind of, whether you want to be or not, you're tethered to the present by virtue of the body that you're experiencing. And that has a kind of effect of just quieting down the regions of the brain known as the default mode network, which are involved and active when we're engaged in self-referential thinking about ourselves, how we're doing, what we're doing, what we should be doing, what we shouldn't be doing. And it's those networks of the brain that get us thinking about ourselves that tend to tip us into states of anxiety and depression. So calming that down, having ways of calming that down in the practice, can help bring us into balance with ourselves a bit more.
So this just connects all this latest research on the fascia, the importance of relaxing, understanding neuroplasticity, how we can rewire the brain as we change our focus. And, you know, these are the things that excite me, because these are the strategies that support us in not just healing and not just rejuvenating ourselves, but actually moving us into a greater potential of who we can be. In a sense, letting go of the past and becoming more of the future self that we want. That brings us greater fulfillment. So to me, these are so profound in their as resources in this transformation that people are really being drawn to right now. It's, you know,
yeah,
it's bigger than just relaxation, you know? It's bigger. It's a bigger story.
Well, right. And that's, you know, I think as these things go mainstream, like the first wave of it often has a therapeutic angle. Like that's sort of the catch, or the hook that gets people's attention. Like, oh, well, if it's going to lower your blood pressure, it must be good. If it's going to lower your stress, it must be good. And so there's a way that the marketing of it, or the PR of it is couched in therapeutic frames. But as you're getting at, and I think this is where I'm sympathetic to, is that yes, there's these therapeutic benefits of the practice, but that's like saying health is just the absence of disease. And
right.
I think there's a way that I think we're both talking about this. How does this practice actually lead and support a thriving, flourishing life that's open to, as you're describing, kind of self-transcendence? We're transcending our former selves of locked in certain patterns of the body or patterns of mental, emotional conditioning, and actually moving into more authentic, freer, open modes of being that have space for growth and of evolution.
Yeah, so that's why it really attracted me, because what you're saying is really what I was sensing. And when you bring in the fascia, the focus on the fascia as well as the relaxation and, you know, just the flexibility of the body, it just kind of takes it to another level for me, because it incorporates more of what I think is critical.
Yeah, and I recently gave a training looking at the Chinese medical aspects of the practice. But there's a concept that I'm trying to workshop at the moment. So I'm curious what you think of it. But I sort of see the role of yin yoga working on two levels, and I refer to those two levels as the bottom up and then the top down level. So bottom up, let's say you've been sitting at your desk for a long period of time throughout for many weeks and months and years, and you're under a lot of stress in that position. If that's your experience, very likely your fascia starts to contract around that pattern of sitting. And in the contraction, it becomes more inflamed, it becomes thicker, it becomes less hydrated, and your body is literally locked. When the fascia holds that pattern, your body's locked in that position, and it keeps sort of your mind starts exporting the same kinds of emotions and thoughts that you have when you're locked in that pattern. And as most of the body workers that I know will say, if your body's locked in that pattern, the question is, how do you get it out of the fascia? And to do that, you really need types of poses or types of stretches similar to what we do in yin yoga, the long, gentle, prolonged hold to release the tension of the fascia. And once that happens, then the mind above it is freer and is not locked in terms of firing in the same way, quite to the same degree. So that's what I mean by kind of the bottom-up process, that we use the bottom experience of the body to hold these poses for a while to free up bodily patterns that then have an effect on mental patterns. And from the other side, from the top-down side, when you're in a pose, you can also hold intentions to meditate and bring to meet and engage with your experience in a particular way. So you could have the intention of being gentle, receptive, tolerant to what's coming up, as opposed to just being reactive and irritated and whatever else your default reactions might be. And so entering the practice with that meditative level of intention facilitates and dovetails into the kind of release of physical contracture that happens on the level of the body. So I see those two happening sort of simultaneously, which is why I think the yin yoga practice is such a interesting tool to use in the path of transformation.
It seems to be. It intrigues me, I have to say. I loved what you were just saying. So let's talk about, you know, as we're kind of wrapping things up in our conversation, Josh, first of all, your website, people want to know more about you and your programs and your trainings. The best place I would imagine is joshsummers.net. Is that correct? Joshsummers.net.
Yeah, that would be the place to go. And if people are interested in trying the practice, I give out two sort of video sequences that I put together, and those are available if people sign up for my newsletter. So if they go into my website, joshsummers.net, sign up for the newsletter, they'll get access to those two those two practice sessions, and also get a sort of an email series where I try to explain the main benefits and aspects to the approach of the practice.
That's great. And then you've got your Yin Yoga 101 course that they can pay for, which is that six-week course, right?
That was through Yoga Journal, and it's sort of an in-depth introduction to the physical, energetic, and meditative aspects of the practice.
So if you don't have a yin yoga teacher nearby, you can join Josh's program, sign up the Yin Yoga 101, and he'll guide you through it and get to have the experience of the benefits of yin yoga. It's such an interesting conversation, Josh. I'm so glad. I know there's tons more we could be talking about, but we're just kind of scratching the surface. But
I think we hit on some of the really good themes, though, and I appreciate your questions.
Yeah, I think we did too. I want to thank you for being with us today and sharing all of the healing benefits of yin yoga. For those listening, if this is the first time you've heard of yin yoga, check it out. Obviously, lots and lots of benefits. Go to joshsummers.net. And remember, fill your week with love, peace, and harmony. Bye for now.
Amen.